could give a about North Carolina right now. I could.
This is the 5-Point Play Podcast, the diehard Duke basketball fan podcast. House of Horns no more. Taking it down in Raleigh, 79-64. Sean Stewart, man, people have been waiting for him to arrive, and boy, did he ever. 26 minutes, hustling plays all over the court, 12 points, multiple blocks, a couple throwdowns. Like, the guy just, he played fantastic, and he's kind of that X factor that we've been looking for, whether it came from him, whether it came from TJ Power or anybody else, he's Sean Stewart, and he's the most athletic player on the team. We already knew that, but John Shire decided he was going to repeat it again after the game so that everybody in the country knew that that's the kind of impact that he's going to have going forward. And it's great to see because you saw yesterday that it provided us a lot of different options now. Flip can move off the five defensively. Mark Mitchell doesn't have to play 38 minutes if Sean Stewart is playing well. Mm-hmm. Opens things up. And I thought the way that he and TJ Power, who gave, you know, really solid minutes as well in the first half, thought they played very well together. I thought they were very confident. It shows the maturity that they're playing with right now. Tyrese held it down in the first half, and then once Jeremy Cain saw one go down, you knew the lid was off, and I hope it stays off because once he lets you go, you just know it's going in. The four-point play was the dagger. But overall, D, welcome back. You and I are down here in the triangle. All Duke fans know what it's like when we go to Raleigh. What was different? What was different last night?
They weren't taking no for an answer. I mean, they were going to go in. They were going to impose their will. They were going to get what they wanted. And as good as Burns played in the first half, I think that was all a chess and checkers game. Like, they, Burns, go ahead and do your thing in the first half, because in the second half, he was gassed. He was a shell of himself from the first half, and it worked. We don't need to double anybody. We don't need to do anything special. You beat us.
He was resting on defense. That shit was crazy.
Yeah, he was.
He had to.
Let's talk about that. John was like, no, Burns, you're going to have to get out here on these screens. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to switch out here in space. He can't do that. He can't do that. And NC State doesn't have the personnel that allows them to do that. As good as I thought Middlebrooks was, he got exposed in that also. So, I mean, hats off to the coaching staff because they absolutely ran circles around the NC State's coaching staff.
They're going to be looking for a new coaching staff after that game. And I thought
that might have been Keith's last game in the PNC Arena. It really might have.
Yeah. After the game, John Shire was kind of asked about the fact that DJ Burns had a career high or, you know, season high, 27. And I thought it was as politically correct as John Shire could answer that question without just openly being like, yeah, go ahead and get your twos, take 18 seconds off the clock each time you do it, and we're going to make you run. AC, I mean, I thought that it was a masterclass from John Shire.
Yeah, it's that's in this day and age of basketball, that's how you deal with those dudes. You lock up the scoring guard, which we did that. Tyrese Proctor, hats off for your 40 minutes. You lock up their scoring guard, and you let the person who's only going to get 2-point shots get 2-point shots, and you don't foul him, don't put him on the line, make sure he's not efficient. It's what I want to see us do against Armando Bacot. Like, it's the same exact thing. Let him get his two. Like, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares anymore. That era is done. Congratulations. Like, yes, that's exactly what we needed to do. And I thought, the recovery that Sean made in the second half, I thought was, like, he, in the first half, like, he was doing everything he could try. He tried to take a charge. He tried to man him up. He tried to block the shots. He tried to do everything. Second half, his defense on him was, it was awesome. Like, it looked mature. Like, when he pulled the chair out from under him, that had to be a discussion with the coaching staff, but that was awesome. Like, he made it work. You know what I mean? Like, He really, and I think at least two of his three blocks were in the second half, right?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
So, I think two of them.
Even the block that was a goaltend, I like it. Because
I do too.
Hey, guess
I
what? Absolutely. I'm right here.
Right. Exactly. The
other thing he did was, like D brought up, like, we didn't need Mark. And that was one of the things that we've discussed all season is if Mark's not getting 10 or if Mark's not playing effectively, then we're toast. And that was that check another box, man. Like we talked about checking boxes and not having red flags and stuff. That's just that's yet another box checked. I'm not saying that Sean completely replaces Mark Mitchell, but if Mark is not having a good game, you can put Sean in for some extended minutes on somebody. So, you know, we'll get to UNC. See a fair amount of Sean Stewart on Baycott against UNC, in my opinion.
Yeah, Jack, one of the plays that I thought kind of really turned the game in that first half was Ryan Young diving for that loose ball. And just, you know, because we were down 9-0, we went out of Santa Cruz last year where we just kind of got blitzed out of the gym when the game started. The dive by Ryan Young kind of just looked over at his bench and said, no, this is how we're supposed to play. And the team responded admirably to that. It wasn't just Sean Stewart. It wasn't just TJ Power. It was everybody. And when shots weren't falling in the first half for Roach, he kept driving, getting into the rim. And they weren't falling for McCain, but he played solid, and you just knew one of them was going to go down because he was getting good looks. But to me, it was that play by Ryan Young. It's not going to show up on the stat sheet, but that is the kind of play, the hustle play, that kind of galvanized the team and turned that one in the first half.
I mean, yeah, that dive basically led to a 14-3 run, like almost immediately after. Shout out to Ryan. I keep saying it. It keeps being true. Ryan keeps having these games. Like everyone's like, oh, this guy's trash. Why is he ever on the court? Stop it. Ryan Young is on the court to win basketball games, and he did that last night. Stop it. Give the man his flowers.
13 minutes. Admirable defense, 5 rebounds. Like he just comes in and does what he's asked to do. And I think that's a perfect thing for a guy like Sean Stewart to see. Because Ryan Young doesn't care if he plays 2 minutes or 22. He's going to come in and give the same effort. It may not always be as effective, but he's always going to give you that effort level. But overall, you know, obviously proud of the effort here. Proud of the coaching staff. I thought it was a great game plan. Tyrese Proctor, man, like, D, like, that's our guy. I think that he's starting to round into form just like he did at this time last year. And if that's the case, like, he kept us in it with his shooting in the first half, and we had some shooting struggles. And then he kind of just facilitated in the second. He was great.
Yeah, great game. Full 40 minutes. The only gripe, if there's going to be one, is I think Proctor plays too unselfish sometimes. The two passes that he tried to hit Mark with, he was already at the hoop. Just take it, big fella. Just go. You're strong enough. You can get there. You don't need to pass it behind your back or anything. Just go. If you miss it, Mark's there for the offensive rebound. But other than that, Proctor, we talk about Jeremy in March. What Proctor in March is going to be a problem.
Maybe, right? Like, just like you're talking about, it might be too late, at least for this season, to see him take over as a scorer. I don't know. Like, he's going to be opportunistic with his scoring. I don't know that he's ever going to take over like we want to see him do it, at least this year. I think, like, this is kind of like we had the discussion last time all five of us was on when we talked about, is it Roach's team or Proctor's team, especially in clutch moments. I mean, I don't know that Proctor still is showing me that it's him yet. I think it's still Germ, honestly. I really do. Like, not again, I'm just talking about the end of the clock. I'm not talking like Proctor's shots in the first half keeping us in the game. Those are clutch shots because you need those buckets. So I'm not saying he's not clutch. It's not at all what I'm saying. All I'm saying is, just like you just brought up, he defers too much still for me to want him to be the guy with the ball at the end of a game when we need a bucket. Like, he just defers too much for me. So again, like we only have a few more opportunities for him to disprove that, but, and I'm not saying he can't do it. It's less and less likely the more games we continue to go into the season. So, but what he is doing is phenomenal on defense and facilitating this offense. Like, and with Caleb going down, like he's going to be playing 40 minutes a game now, probably for the rest of the season. So,
I'm
happy for it because the more Tyrese, the better.
Yeah, I mean, just Jack defensively, he, you know, comes in and plays lockdown defense for 40 minutes. That was a gripe that we had with him when we played UNC the first time, is that he played really good defense for 40 minutes, but the offense was lacking. And so to me, I thought that that's kind of like the corner that he's turned over the last three or four ball games, where ever since he kind of hurt his head at the Wake Forest game at Duke, I think he's kind of turned that corner. And I think that maybe he's not going to be the leading scorer or anything like that. I don't think that we personally need him to be. But he's going to continue to get more effective, in my opinion. Where do you land on it?
I mean, I agree. He put up 11 points, played really good defense on State's best scorer. If he had put up 11 points against Carolina while doing what he did defensively to Davis, that game is completely different. Like, this is... it's just different. It's awesome. It's beautiful. I tweeted during the Virginia game, and I tagged UAC. I said, aggressive Tyrese is a good Tyrese because you keep saying it. We're seeing it. He's being way less passive while continuing to play really good defense.
Mm-hmm.
He's finding a way to manage that and, you know, have a little bit of something in the tank to save
that's the impressive the offensive part, right?
Side. That's incredibly impressive. Part is that
he's able to play defense and play on the offensive side of the ball the way he does too. That's impressive.
He's a better defender than Quinn Cook, but it's almost like what Quinn Cook was doing in that 2015 run.
Mm-hmm.
Except the fact to me is that he's the point guard. Like, he's running the ball up every single time.
Like, he's doing this as the point guard. That's incredibly impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's closer to what Trey Jones does than Quinn Cook.
Yes. I just keep going back to those 2015 parallels.
For obvious reasons. Because we're going to win the chip this year. But it's all good.
But, yeah, I mean, honestly, there was a lot of, positive takeaways because – I think when you look at the box scores, and this is where box scores can be very deceiving. We didn't shoot the ball particularly well. We rebounded the ball, you know, on the offensive glass, fantastic. That's going to pay huge dividends. But defensively, we're really strong. And really what I keep taking away from this team is that we're really good defensively. Yeah, we have some breakdowns here and there. A lot of times there, you know, those the ball screen actions, but and some backdoor action pause. But like a lot of times, there is the like this team defensively to me is very sound, and they all to me are seemingly bought in at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think moving Flip off the ball for large stretches of the game, whether it's Mitchell or Sean Stewart or even Ryan Young, that's going to pay huge dividends in March going forward.
This game should have been all John needs to see now to make that transition fully happen. Yeah. Like, It's got to be Mark and Sean and Ryan on whoever's scoring big is in the game. It's got to be one of those three and not Flip. Like, once again, Flip is in foul trouble out the entire first half. Can't get his groove in the second half. Like, we can't have this dude on somebody scoring, man. We just can't. And he's a better secondary defender anyway. He proved that last year with Lively. Like,
yeah.
Like, let those other three use their 15 fouls on somebody's Armando Bacot or Donovan Kling and Zach Edey, and we let Flip play off the ball and play help defense, man. Like, It's too much. It's too much for him.
Yeah, we can't afford that. I mean, obviously, last night we were able to withstand it, right, in the first half.
Yeah, NC State. No,
it's NC State. But going forward, you can't have Flip out for 16 or 17 minutes in the first half. That's just
exactly.
And because you don't want him picking up two fouls, and that's the only way he's going to do it. He's not going to do it playing, you know, the four or anything like that. Before we move on to UNCD, I want to give you another opportunity here. To give your piece.
Yeah, like AC was saying, I think this was more of John saying, let's see if Sean can do this against a Division I opponent for 26 minutes. I don't want Sean Stewart to play 26 minutes.
No.
That's crazy. I think that 12 to 15 mark, like we talked about, going into the turning time, going into tournament time, that's where we need Stewart at. And I think he can give you every bit of this box score that he gave you last night in that 12 to 15 minutes. Hell, he's done it before in 8 minutes. Correct?
Yeah.
And he had a double-double in like 8 minutes, yeah.
You know what I mean? So just his energy, his effort. Very rarely do you see a freshman guy, just diving on the floor like that, just intercepting, just being there. And I think him being on the floor will stop a lot of what coaches want to do because they can't. There is no backdoor lob with Sean Stewart there. He's going to jump and take that. You know what I mean? Like, so just him being on the floor is going to change the way people play the game. And I think it's huge for Duke that and John and the coaching staff to see it come to fruition and say, yeah, he can do it. Here's the proof.
I think both the freshmen, because we started this discussion before the pod, so I kind of want to continue it. I think both the freshmen offer that. I like which we were kind of talking about D. TJ and Sean. I agree with you, D, that TJ is just he's just like an average player. Yes, you're correct. Like, he's not anything extraordinary. What he does have, and this is a word Pablo likes to use a lot, which is a great word to use. He has gravity. And you saw it against NC State. They were face guarding TJ Power last night, which that takes away a help defender, that takes away somebody who's gonna be in drop coverage. Now you can't play drop anywhere against Duke now. It is virtually impossible now to play drop coverage against Duke. We have beaten that bugaboo back a long time ago, and now teams have kind of started trying to do it again, and now you got TJ Power in the game, and you can't drop and you can't help off of him. And that, so I think that's his addition. That's important for his addition on top of what you just talked about, TK, which is the defense. I feel like he's been pretty solid on defense. He hasn't been a revolving door on defense, which that's a big deal. Being 6'9", that's helpful, getting him to be able to come in the game for 5 to 10 minutes and be able to do that. Draw somebody's defender out, space the floor better.
I don't think TJ's been asked to defend like Sean has, though.
No, of course not. What I am saying is, I'm not saying he's brought into the game to be Tyrese Proctor and defend your best guard. What I am saying is, if you bring him into the game to create gravity on the offensive side of the ball, on the other side of the ball on defense, he's not going to just get beat relentlessly. That's all I'm trying to say.
He's not lost out there. I'll give you that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought that last night. I know that he was 1 of 5, but like, I don't even care about the missed shots. Take him in rhythm, which he did, but he also was more aggressive. He wasn't just standing, parking himself in the corner, you know, like he's done in the past. He's moving. He's showing alertness. He's going up there and helping out with rebounds, whether he's grabbing them for himself or, you know, keeping the ball alive. That happened multiple times. He played like 10 or 11 minutes yesterday, and most of those were in the first half when we actually needed it. Mm-hmm. You know, he brought it up in terms of offensively. Yeah, he's going to obviously stretch the floor because you can't leave him open. He's too good of a shooter. Eventually, those are going to go down if we're going to give him those opportunities. And I kind of linking it to the fact that what he did, what John did against Louisville after the Wake Forest game, he brought in TJ. He brought in Sean. He did not play friend of the podcast. And I think that was intentional because at 6'9", like, you have to account for that. You just do. Mm-hmm. He gives you something that friend of the podcast never will. And I'm not trying to take a shot at him, but like, it's just a completely different dynamic that he provides. And I think that gives us another extra gear that we didn't show 4 games ago.
Exactly. And John wants to play an 8-man rotation. Now we have the 8-man rotation. I think that is official now. Whether TJ plays 5 or he plays 10 depends on if he's shooting well or not. But in my opinion, he is Andre Dawkins from the 09-10 team. You come in, I can absolutely see him in March, a game we might be struggling with in the second weekend or something, and TJ comes in and knocks down 2 threes to keep us in the game or bring us back into a game. I can absolutely see that scenario, man. And that might be all we ever need out of him this season. And you know what? If we get it, awesome.
And he's going to need game legs to do that. So that was the perfect game to let him get his 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt.
I'm with it. That was a fantastic coaching performance across the board.
Yeah, I don't see him as like a true difference maker like Sean Stewart is. I just see him as somebody who can who he gives us a need, which is that shooting, especially with Foster out.
He's a serviceable dude who can knock a shot down.
Yeah.
All right, well, a lot has happened since February 3rd for not only Duke, but for UNC.
UNC in North Carolina right now.
Well, they're going to find out. So here's the thing is that that game, we've talked about it. We've broken it down. Coach's Corners, done all those. And we'll do another Coach's Corner this week, AC.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're playing on that.
That's happening.
Perfect. So we'll lay that out there at the end of the podcast, probably do that Wednesday or Thursday this week, and that'll be on our Patreon, so make sure you check that out. But it's round two. This is round two, and I think a lot of differences will be had in this game, and I think we're playing some of our best basketball, if not our best, so far this season. I think UNC is the exact same team that they've always been. A lot of comparisons, AC, you and I talked about this on Spaces last night. There's a lot of comparisons to older Duke teams in the past where they're pretty much who they are. It's J.J. Redick and Sheldon Williams and then everybody else. And then also last night against NC State, I think we kind of laid the blueprint of how we should defend UNC, but I'll let you break it down.
Yeah, no, one thing I wanted to point out about UNC is every time they've played a rubber match with another team, they've either lost or they've at least the score differential was significantly reduced. NC State, they beat them by like 13. Yep, they beat NC State by like 13 before, lost or beat them by 9 the second time they played them. Beat the hell out of Syracuse the first time they played them, put a 105 on them, and then they came back and lost to them. Lost to Clemson the second time they played them. So now the last rubber match they got is Duke. How are they going to come out with it, man? Like, it's hard to beat a team twice. It's not easy. We saw that with Wake. So it's not an easy feat to just go and beat a team two times. So, I mean, I feel good. I feel uncomfortably confident about this game.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to bring up is just that is, you know, we don't often predict Duke to ever lose, you know, when we get into our predictions. I didn't feel great going into that first matchup. But kind of like AC, I can't wait for this game on Saturday. I'll give my prediction at the end, but I can't wait for this game. I just think something's going to happen here.
Yeah, TK, you hit on it earlier. We live here. We're in the middle of this triangle, and it is different. And anybody, no offense, guys, anybody who says it's not different does not live here because it's absolutely different. I'm with you. The other Saturday, the first Saturday, super nervous. It's Duke UNC, game one. Here we go. What are they going to bring to the table? And honestly, I said this before. If you told me Duke scored 84 points against North Carolina, I'd be like, how much did they win by? How much did they win by? I think Duke beat themselves more than Carolina beat Duke. Duke missed a lot of open shots. They missed a lot of layups. They missed a lot of free throws. Duke is better than they were February 3rd in just a month. So I can't – I am so excited for this game on Saturday, man. Like, game day is going to be there. It's going to be hype. There's no excuse now. It's hard to beat a good team twice, AC.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And one of the – again, this it still holds true. One of the things I brought up in the first matchup, Hammerfield's on the pod or on Coach's Corner, but UNC has still not had a game where Baycott and Cadeau have had double-digit shot attempts with each other. I think that's crucial. I think that is key for us to do to beat them in Cameron. And the game plan we utilized against UNC, I don't see us doing that again. We now have Sean Stewart in the rotation. We have Mark Mitchell available. Obviously, we have Ryan Young available. Like, those are the guys who are going to be on Baycott. I think I fought for it last time. I am still fine with putting Flip on Harrison Ingram. He is not that good of a ball handler where Flip can't handle it. And yeah, he's going to put him in space and stuff. Cool. Like, Flip's going to hang back. He's going to use a 7-foot frame to be able to close out on shots. And he's just not going to let him get easy buckets at the rim, which is what happened last time. He got those easy baskets at the rim. It set him up. And then he started knocking down threes, which he can do. But the last few games, Harrison Ingram has not been as efficient from three as he had been prior to that game in Cameron or in Chapel Hill. So, I mean, force the ball into Elie Cadeau's hands, force the ball into Baycott's hands. That's how I would play this game if humanly possible. If you can make that happen, I would make UNC make that adjustment because that's not what they want to do, and they haven't done it all season.
All right, Jeff, that's 3 for 3 so far that we all feel pretty good. Where do you kind of land on this matchup, and what kind of differences do you expect in round two?
I feel really good. Literally as soon as the buzzer sounded on February 3rd, I was just like, okay, Duke's winning at Cameron, because the things that were major were things that Duke is significantly better at Cameron as opposed to away from home. You know, free throw disparity is something, you know, a home whistle is always a thing. There's a pretty significant free throw disparity. That's a thing that's probably going to swing in Duke's favor as opposed to Carolina's at Cameron. But that aside, Duke's a much, much better team. They've got more options. They've got, you know, John's going to make better adjustments, I think. I think that was an issue. I think there were some coaching mistakes and oversights that really hurt the team. I think that will be remedied. I think they've been preparing for this for a while. I would like to hope. I would like to think that's the case. I feel good. I feel really good. You know, talking about that putting Flip on Ingram and Mitchell, Stewart, Young on Baycott. made me think about the 2018 ACC semifinal, which was the third matchup between Duke and Carolina, but Roy Williams made an adjustment. He shifted Pinson onto Bagley, and it worked. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty large reason why Duke lost that game. Now, why it worked, I have no idea. Theo Pinson is not the guy he should have guarding Marvin Bagley. Let's be real, but it worked. It shut down Duke's offense because the offense was basically just give the ball to Bagley and let him work.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of matchups I want to get into. One of the things that that I've been kind of preaching over the last few weeks is, you know, Duke controls their turnovers, and I know it's not ever perfect. We had 11 turnovers in our first matchup. They had 5. You know, it is something that has to come closer to being even if we want to, kind of have the success that I think we're going to. But, AC, in terms of, I feel like we have, as a unit, just focusing on Duke first before we get into the matchups, we know who we have right now, and we're not a one-trick pony. That's what you said, right? We're not a one-trick pony anymore. Like, you can try to take out a flip, but now you have to account for Jared McCain, who now has seen a big basket. Jeremy Roach is his senior day. It's going to be the last time he plays in Cameron. So you know he's coming up fired up.
Yeah.
I think it's probably going to be the last game that Filipowski, Proctor, all these guys are playing in Cameron. So you know they're going to be coming out fired up. What would you like to see just from, a strategy standpoint offensively for Duke?
I mean, offensively, I want to see us just keep putting the pedal down, the hammer down, man. Like, we're in a good groove on offense. We've been in a good groove on offense now for the last 5 games or so. Like, we're going to have to score with them. Like, bottom line, we're going to have to score with them. I misspoke a little bit when I said that Ingram hasn't been as good from three. He's about the same. His percentage is down a little bit, but it's really not that significantly. It's not that much down from what it was when we played him the first time. So, he's going to shoot. If they are going to shoot, RJ Davis is going to put up a bunch of shots. Like,
right.
That's the thing. I think this game is more about the defensive side of the ball. Like, offensively, I think we do what we need to do. Like, they didn't do anything to us last time on the defensive, other than we made some bonehead turnovers. Like, we turned the ball over in some spots that we shouldn't have done that. But they're not a turnover causing defense. That's not what they do. They funnel you to bad spots. Kind of like us, honestly. They kind of funnel you to bad spots where you don't want the ball. Like, that's what they want you to do. And like, they can't do anything to us defensively that we can't handle. Like, we can handle them on the offensive side of the ball. In my opinion, it's that defensive side of the ball, man. Do we see some zone? We actually saw some extended minutes in zone last night against NC State for the first time all season, where we ran that 2-3 zone for a little bit in that first half, just trying to counteract whatever DJ Burns was doing just a little bit, just kind of playing with them. But, I mean, you've seen now what a zone does to UNC this season. A zone against UNC this season is detrimental to them. So do we play – maybe not a zone. Maybe it's we pack the lane in a little bit more on man or something. We don't chase them out on the three as much. I don't know. But, I mean, we have to affect them on defense a little better than we did the first time.
Yeah, you brought up the turnovers. Theo, I'll get to you. It was a 19-7 points off of turnovers differential in game one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it, this has been the one thing I've been beating like a dead horse all season, is the unforced turnovers. You know, I think I'm a broken record at this point. It's probably being annoying. But it's something that I see with this team. If we can, and we did that against NC State. I think we only had, 4 or 5 turnovers last night against NC State. So we do that. But go ahead, kind of pick up of where AC was defensively.
I mean, I think this is more defensive, man. The offense was fine. Other than Duke shot 19% from the three in the first game, and they're the leading three-point shooting team in the ACC. So I just don't see – that wasn't UNC doing some masterful defensive performance. That was Duke missing shots. I don't see Duke shooting 19% from the three at Cameron. I don't see Duke shooting 19% from three moving forward. And to talk a little more about the defense, I'll live on this and die on this hill. I don't think you need to double Bacot. You can guard him straight up, put Stewart on him, use all 15 fouls. Don't let the other guys beat you. Don't give up open threes. Let RJ Davis dribble around the three-point line and shoot the fadeaways like he likes. And Duke wins by 15+. It's fairly simple. At its core, basketball is really simple. Again, if Duke scored 84 points against UNC, I'd ask you how many points they won by. I don't think, like AC, you said, we're going to have to score with them. Yes, I agree. But they're going to have to score with Duke too.
They are going to have to go over Duke. And in the past, ever since the Duke game, they've allowed opponents to shoot 36% from three. That's a big deal, because before going into that game, they were, I want to say, they were at like 29% or something like that.
They were one of the best in the country.
Teams were not shooting the ball well on three against them. And it, like we kind of talked about even before that game, it wasn't anything they were doing specifically. They were just funneling, letting your worst shooter shoot shots is kind of what they were doing. But good luck picking somebody to shoot a shot other than Mark Mitchell on this team. And even Mark might knock one or two down. He's liable to do it. So, I mean, I don't think we're not going to get into a shooting match with him.
Yeah,
it's got to be from the top of the key, that's for sure.
And make sure he's looking at the rim. Exactly. Jack, kind of, you know, your feelings defensively, and then we'll talk offense a little bit and give some predictions here.
Don't let Harrison Ingram put up 25.
Bingo.
Don't let Harrison Ingram put up 25 and you win the first game.
Truly.
Yeah, I mean, AC, this was your call. We all told you were nuts. But then again, you know, John Shire basically did exactly what you wanted us to do in the first North Carolina game last night.
Mm-hmm.
And so you believe that that's going to happen here.
Yes. Let the inefficient twos fall, man. Like, you just can't let guys, like, Ingram didn't shoot a single free throw against us that first game. So, you know what I mean? Like, we got to affect him more on defense. You got to be up on his jersey a little bit more on defense. Whether it's Mark, whether it's Flip, I don't care who it is. Like, I'm not gonna fight the fight anymore about it. Is it gonna be Flip or not? I'm not gonna fight that fight. If it is, cool. If it's not, whatever. I'm not the coach. I'm not getting paid to do it. But whoever is guarding Harrison Ingram has to be in his jersey. Like, that guy shooting eight times. You tell me if Harrison Ingram shoots eight times this game against us, like, perfect, absolutely perfect. Like, I don't want him in double digits with shot attempts like he was in the first game. I want him in single digits and shot attempts, because that means somebody else has got to take him. And more than likely, it's Baycott or it's Cadeau, and I'm happy with that.
All right, here we go. The guard matchups I felt in the first half or in the first matchup, that Duke has better guards. They really do. I mean, you know, RJ Davis will be the ACC Player of the Year. Sure. He's had a phenomenal year.
Good for him. He deserves it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, like, here's the thing. I still believe that our three guards aren't better than their guards. I really do. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I think they're going to show it. They have, you know, at home, senior day, I think Jeremy Roach has a big game. But talk about our guards versus theirs. Go ahead, D.
That's just a matchup issue. Not issue. Like, who do you want to guard who? Because it really doesn't matter. If I'm coaching the team, I'm putting Proctor on RJ Davis, and I'm telling him not to leave him. Don't take an eyes off of him. Right? If I Jeremy Roach, Cadeau, don't let him dribble past the half or the free throw extended line.
Sag and make him shoot. You talk about drop coverage. There's your drop coverage right there.
That's all I really want to see. And McCain, just do McCain things. Like, McCain doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's not going to do anything to hurt the team. But Roach, Proctor, don't let these two dudes out of your sight. And that's the hill. Like I said, the hill I would die on.
Our guards getting, you know, kind of going nuts on offense a little bit is going to be key for this game, in my opinion. Like, getting McCain some shots, getting Roach some shots, because at that point, now you're going to have to put Seth Trimble in the game, which means somebody that they want to rely on is going to have to come out, whether it's not going to be Davis, but Cadeau, Cormac Ryan, one of those guys is going to have to come out of the game, because
Trimble might be able to guard our guards. Difficult to guard, to be honest with you. That's a bigger dude.
Yeah, Trimble had 10 against us. He hadn't had 10 since. He hasn't scored in double digits since the Duke game, and he's probably going to. He's probably going to score 10 against us.
He matches up well against Duke. You know what I mean?
That's going to be a guy we're going to miss Foster against. I think Foster would have been able to cover him decently.
I think that TJ Power could guard him if necessary. I think he could, too. Being a bigger guy, like, who knows who we put on the floor, right? If we have a lineup of Sean Stewart, Flip, and Mitchell at some point, the three big lineup that Diaz talked about before. Now that opens up Martin Mitchell to guard one of these perimeter players too. Yes. So that's another option that we have, which, in my opinion, that's just better for us. Like you said, TK, our guards were better the first game. They were better than their guards the first game. Like, unequivocally, we had the better guards in that game. this game, I think, is going to be similar. I think it's going to be the same. Like, I don't see LA Cadeau outperforming Jeremy Roach by any stretch of the imagination. RJ Davis, sure, will do his thing. Do we get some points out of Tyrese this time? Because I think we can, and I think we will. Jared McCain is the X factor. He gives you more than Cormac Ryan and Seth Trimble can give you combined. Like, we're good, man. I ain't worried, dog.
I think McCain can guard different people on that team also. I just want to say that.
I think he can too.
Yeah.
Ingram might be a stretch, but he can absolutely guard Trimble. And if he has to, I'm pretty sure he can. Mm-hmm. You can put him on Ingram and let the ball roll.
He's a tough and very underrated. He's a tough and underrated defender. Tough and underrated.
He's a great rebounder. That's going to be another. Like, our guards rebound so well. Like, you saw it again last night. Guards coming down with boards and stuff. Like, our guard, it's been incredible this season to watch the way our guards have rebounded. I didn't know I'd ever see a Duke team with guards that rebound like that, man. It's been insane.
Yeah, I mean,
which is going to be key. Getting transition points against this UNC team is going to be key.
Yeah, transition against UNC is always like the X factor to me. You know, stop them in down the one shot and then try to get yourself in transition and set up. But go ahead, Jack. I know you wanted to add something there.
He's a tough and underrated defender. He's on that side of the ball, Jared's better than a lot of people think. But I mean, this is a big thing. I'm going to go back to something that D said earlier about, you know, Duke put up 84. Great. How much did they win by? Duke had three guys score 20 in the first Carolina game. As far as, like, this is not a checked fact. This is just going off memory. I don't think Duke has lost a game in the last 25 years where they've had three guys score 20 points outside of that game.
People kept asking, and nobody could come with an answer.
I can tell you for sure that they – I don't even think in a Final Four game because – the only one that would be possible was probably Langdon.
99. I was gonna say 99.
He had
20.
He had 25. I don't think anyone else had 20.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point. Like, this is the only time in the last 25 years, I'm pretty sure, that Duke's had three guys score 20 and they haven't won the game.
Mm-hmm.
Just clean up a few things. Get, you know, be more careful with the ball. You have a win on your hands.
If a few shots in that first game fall, it's a dub for Duke.
Yes.
Like, that simple. I mean, again, I don't think Carolina did anything spectacular defensively that Duke was like, oh, my God, we can't recover. They scored 84 points, like you just said. Three dudes had 20. It's a matter of shots going through the hoop. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
19% and missing free throws. And I'd have to go back and watch the game, but countless missed layups. Countless missed layups.
Yeah.
And we still shot 60% from two that game, even though we had the missed layups.
We can't blame the refs for all of that.
No. I'm saying that we missed some layups. We still shot 60% from two. The three-point difference was threes. Threes and turnovers.
3%, we'd have probably won by 12.
Yeah. Threes and turnovers, that was the deal. Threes and turnovers. Yeah. They scored off our turnovers, and that was it.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, we were 9 from 11 from the free throw line. The free throw line wasn't a factor in why we lost the game. Like, other than we didn't get as many as they got.
Yeah, the disparity was.
We didn't miss an inordinate amount of shots. We missed two free throws. That's it.
Shooting 19% from the 3-point line. I think
that's what it was.
That was the dagger for Duke that game.
For a team that has so many good shooters, like
everyone just went cold at the wrong time.
It's not happening again.
What was last night against State?
I don't think so either.
3-point decision against State.
Not great, but I think outside of Proctor,
first half,
like we were 9 of 30 or something like that. Yeah, because I mean, in the first half, while you guys are looking it up, I know that Proctor was 3 of 5 and the rest of the team
9 of 30, yeah,
1 of 11. They were 1 of 11 in the first half outside of Tyrese Proctor. Mm-hmm. So,
as a team, 9 of 30, Proctor was 3 of 8, McCain was 3 of 9, the rest of the team was 3 of 13? Yeah, 13.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see what they.
But what I loved last night was that McCain, as soon as he hit one,
it was over.
McCain hit one and just became Steph.
And the thing with that, actually, to me, is that, you know, for a couple of games there, he wasn't, you know, Steph, right? He may have hit one, may have hit two, but he wasn't, you could tell it wasn't going in.
Yeah.
And for me, once he started knocking down a couple, that will 100%.
That's huge. Continue. It's going to transfer.
I think so. I think so. And even if it doesn't continue into like a high percentage, at the very least, again, this game against UNC, with the gravity of the game and everything, we might not be shooting well. Like neither UNC might not shoot well either. But when you need points and when you need a shot, I still want his hands taking that shot.
They have to guard him.
He's gonna take it. Like he's gonna take that shot.
To me, all these Duke Carolina games, is that first 10 minutes, you just kind of throw everything out the window and say, all right, let's let people settle down. And then the real game starts. And then that first 4 minutes of the second half is kind of the same. And then it really is that last 12 to 13 minutes of the game. That's where the game is won or lost. And that, you know, we got ourselves down so big in that first half, in that last kind of 10, 11 minutes of that first half that, you know, we had our chances to come back, but it was so much of it was self-inflicted. Yeah. And that, if we clean those things up like we talked about, you know, the shots will fall for this team. They might be a little warm to start the game, you know, when you're jacked up. But we're going to win this game.
Yeah. I feel very confident about this game. I really do.
I can't wait for this game to happen.
It might be irrational, but I am incredibly confident.
Yeah. And we're wrong, but I'm just telling you, genuinely, this time, I feel like...
I don't think it's irrational, Jack. I think if any basketball fan in the country, like, if they were being completely honest with you, they'd be like, yeah, I think Duke's playing better basketball right now. I mean, use all the metrics. I don't give a fuck about metrics, right? Excuse my language. I just don't give a fuck about metrics right now. I don't give a fuck about the analytics. Use your eyes, people. Use your eyes. You're telling me Duke's not playing better basketball than Carolina right now? Fuck out of here.
I'm gonna take the metrics and say the same thing you said. Since that loss, Duke by Torvik's numbers, Duke is the number three team in the country. Carolina is not one or two.
But that sounds good. So let's go.
Yeah, and so like both of them are true. Like if you just watch the games, you see that we're playing better. And not only are we, like, put away the fact that who's playing better right now. Just look at how we were playing at that point to how we are playing now. It's not totally night and day, but it kind of is because of the different pieces that we've now integrated into our team and the, so many different ways that we can beat you. It's not a one-dimensional team. It's not even a two-dimensional team. There's four, five, six guys that can beat you in a variety of different ways. It could be Mark Mitchell, you know, going off and having 17 and 11. It could be Filipowski, you know, having 21 and 9. It can be Jeremy Cain dropping 35 like this if he's getting hot. It can be, you know, Tyrese just saying, fuck it, here's my time, here's my spotlight. I haven't really had it this year. And him knocking down, you know, 15, 17 first half points. Like, there's so many different ways for this team. And I haven't brought up Jeremy Roach or, you know, Sean Stewart. And like, there's so many different ways that this team can now beat you. That you can't just game plan for one. That to me is the huge difference for Duke right now. Kind of a lot of the teams that as they were. And that's good. It's good, but you've seen it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you game plan for two players at UNC.
Right.
You game plan for Harrison Ingram, you game plan for RJ Davis. Against Duke, you got a game plan against five. Like
to six.
It's tough. That's tough, man. It's not easy, bro. It's not easy, and UNC doesn't have the horses on defense to just say, yeah, we can do that. Like they've allowed a higher three-point percentage. They're turning teams over far less than they did to start the season. Like they're a team that is – it's hard to say they're declining. I'm not going to sit here and say they're declining, but I am going to say that they are not as efficient on either side of the ball as they had been prior to the Duke game, number one. Like they are definitely a team that is not – they're stagnant. They feel stagnant. They don't feel like a team like Duke is a team that's clearly ascending. They're not that.
I think they plateaued.
Yeah.
Yes.
They've done what Duke teams in the past have done, which is plateaued. They're still dangerous, but they've plateaued. They're not changing. Like they're not changing. So you know what to expect for them more so than they know what to expect from us. They go with the same game plan they tried last time. It's going to fail.
UNC played their best basketball in November and December, in my opinion. Like
I agree.
Like, they started out unranked, correct?
No, weren't they like 18?
It was like 18th or something.
No, yeah, they were 18.
18. Skyrocketed to number five. Leveled out. Mm-hmm. That's the UNC team you're going to get. You're going to get Davis. You're going to get Baycott. You're going to get Ingram. And you're going to get a little sprinkle of Cormac Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
That's UNC. Like AC said, Duke's got five, six dudes who can beat you on any given night.
I'm just waiting for the fucking game. I want to get into some predictions here. You know, Jack, you've kind of been off and on with giving score predictions. I want it on the record.
That's what's up.
Ah, gosh, put me on the spot to start. Okay, let's see. So you got Duke, who has been putting up really good numbers lately. I think Duke can put up 82 to 75. It's going to be a really good game.
Always delivers. I think
Duke's gonna pull away in the end.
I like it. D, what do you got?
84 plus. I don't care what UNC has. I want 84 plus again out of Duke, and I want to see how many points they beat them by.
AC?
Yeah, man. Every team that UNC has played that is a quality opponent, a team that probably or could make the tournament, they've given up 80 points except for Wake. Wake and Oklahoma are the only two that didn't score 80.
Wake's not making the tournament. Wake is – last I checked, Wake was losing 14-0 to Georgia Tech.
Well, damn. Well, there it is. So wipe them out. Oklahoma is the only tournament team that UNC has played this season that they didn't allow them to score 80. We are scoring 80. The difference is what we're going to do on defense this time, and I think it's going to be impressive. I'm not. At last game, I was going nuts and saying we're going to beat them by 30 or whatever else. I ain't doing that this time. Like 82 to 74, 75, and I think we sew it up towards the end of the game with some big plays from our senior Jeremy Roach.
So the same thing I said.
You said 82-75 too.
I said 82-75. Duke pulls away in the end.
I like it, man. With it, I agree. That's so funny. I'm sorry, Jack. I was looking at the numbers because I was trying to see what UNC was doing against quality opponents.
Hey, great minds. Great minds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I'm gonna die on this hill. I just believe in this team too much. I think that this team is ascending. They came in here for a reason to start this year. All three sophomores came back. Jeremy Roach is back. It's his last game in Cameron. It may be a little ugly to start, but I really believe that we're gonna take this 15. Like, I really do. So 89-74.
I love it.
I'm confident in this. We're the better team. We got the better players. We got the better coach. We are ascending. They plateaued. Go to fucking Carolina and go to hell. Let's go, Duke.
Go to hell, Carolina. Go to hell. Go to hell, Carolina. Go to hell. Thank y'all.
Go to hell, Carolina. Go to hell.
We got Coach's Corner coming up this week. Check that out on the Patreon. You know where we're going to be on Twitter. We're going to be there all day on Twitter. Space is probably going to be an hour before game time. You know or not. Hopefully all of us going to be over there on Spaces. You know, this is going to be a big one. No UNC fans talking on Spaces this time. I guarantee you that.
I'll
be damned. Just check us out.
And real quick, B. Hodge has agreed to do another Natty Light scoreboard. So,
Natty Light challenge. The five.
I'm telling you, he's 1-0. He's 1-0. He's 1-0, and we won by 25. So he's committed.
This man.
And if you want to pitch
sacrificing
in,
sacrificing himself.
If you want to pitch in,
his poor liver.
He's dropped in whatever you got to do for the team. And he's dropped his Venmo on our Discord, so make sure that.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to contribute to Bee Hodge Natural Light Scoreboard, it's a big game. It's the arch rival game.
Oh, man, we're going to get a cease and desist right here.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying if you'd like to. Either way, join us on Discord because the game day chats are electric.
Great.
So. Discord link is on the Patreon, which is
so you got to join the Patreon.
That link at the bottom of our screen if you're watching.
Yeah,
check
Let's
us out,
Duke, baby. Go to hell, Carolina. Go to hell.
Let's go, Duke.
Good luck, B. Hodge.